You're watching Network Radio. Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen to it.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center. Hello,
it's Alan Powell again, sitting in for Jim Fetzer on The Real Deal. We're having a little bit of trouble getting James Tracy, our first guest, on. He's having trouble with our software. We've experienced this before. But I'll just keep yapping until we can get him on. Now, I've got two guests tonight. One is Jim Tracy and the other is Scott Bennett. Now, both have in common the fact that each has found, well, fraud being perpetrated on the American people, and both have spoken out about it and have been sanctioned by authority for their troubles. Now, the conduct of events against both these gentlemen represents the action of a fascist government insisting that everybody has to be on the same page, has to be subservient and silent if they are not. And if they are not, they will be sanctioned. Now, for whatever the nature of the discovery, in Scott's case, it was absolute corruption. And in Jim's case, it was simply putting out to both his students as a lecturer and through the internet to internet viewers the fact that Sandy Hook and Boston were both frauds. But whatever the nature of the discovery, whether it's public fraud, corruption or incompetence, the example of these two gentlemen shows that you can be sanctioned by government agencies if you try to expose what these government agencies are doing. Now, while we're waiting for Jim to come on, I'll just give you a sort of a rundown of things that Jim would agree with about Sandy Hook. And this is handy. We can talk about Sandy Hook without Jim being here, because I think there's an upcoming litigation concerning it. But when we get to the extent that we can notify the public about actors involved in both Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing, who are previously government employees, such as Alicia Hannon, who was an FBI officer, when we can see photographs of her wearing a wig, dragging a bunch of autistic children across a car park, and that's pretended to the American public to be the evacuation of Sandy Hook, a massacre that never happened. When you can get that being portrayed by a government and sold to the American people as reality, there is something terribly, terribly wrong. We've seen all of this kind of thing before, where an authoritarian government decides what happened, decides what its people will be told, decides, in fact, what history was, and doesn't allow for the free dissemination and the free exchange of ideas from person to person about history. Now, when it gets to the stage that you have with Jim Tracy, that a lecturer with tenure is dismissed for petty reasons, the real reasons, let's face it, are being that he's exposed that Sandy Hook was a fake. He's exposed one of the so-called parents, Lenny Posner, as being a fake. But you can have somebody like Posner getting up all kinds of interest groups to rail against Jim Tracy, for example. That is just a situation of fascism. The truth is being trodden on. It's being tramped down. It's not being allowed to come out. Now, there are, of course, all sorts of ways that the government can affect what it calls the truth. It can, to jump to Scott, for example, it can put out articles about Lavoie Finicum saying that everybody knew he carried a sidearm, and as if that is some form of crime in an open carry state. It obviously wasn't. But where the media is controlled to present to the population a particular view, and again in the Oregon situation, the only view that I could find through mainstream media was that these people had invaded a government structure. I understand it was some kind of a refuge or something for campers, or it certainly wasn't a huge government building. But the way it was presented through the internet and through media to me was that there were these bunch of rebels who deserved to face the full force of the federal government because what they were doing was against the law. Well, I didn't quite agree with that because I think they termed themselves as militia. And as my understanding of the American Constitution is that the highest form of power is the militia. It's the people. It's not the government. You don't have an introduction to your constitution that says, we the government. It says, we the people. Fantastic experiment. The best experiment in popular government that the world has ever seen. But it has become perverted. It has become simply diluted into a form of fascism where you simply have to do what the government says. And the government can present to you a view of history. It can tell you what happened in the past, and you're not allowed to in any way go against that. Now, Chance, have we had any luck with Jim coming on yet? He's probably still trying to get Jim on. Okay, good. See if you can keep going. Oh, looks like we probably have him on now. Here he is, Jim Tracy. Jim, can you hear me? Jim, can you hear me? I don't think he can. Jim, we can see you. We can't hear you.
Hear me now?
Yep, we got you. We got you. Right, Jim. I've just given you a fantastic intro, basically saying that you're, yes, I know, I'm very good for that. Basically saying that you have something in common with Scott Bennett. Have you ever met Scott Bennett, by the way?
I don't believe so. I think I may have heard of him.
Yeah. Well, today we'll have a chance for you and he to chat because you're both in the same boat. As I see it. Now tell me where I go wrong on this. What I said was that, what you both have in common, the fact that you both found errant government performance on a large scale, you both brought it to light, and you both, after having spoken about it, were sanctioned by authority for your troubles. Now, the same thing has happened with Scott, and that's what you do have in common. Now, the conduct of events through government agencies, for me, just represents one of the heights of the definition of fascist government. You tread on people who come up with an alternate version of the past. You can't stand to have modern history viewed in any way other than something that fulfills your political ends. Give us your words of wisdom on that, James.
Well, it's the journalism, first of all, of course, that creates the history, right? Because journalism is that template, that first blueprint for history. And so it's necessary to be able to control the news production process. And once that's done with the establishment or the corporate media, then history is developed, is created out of that. That's one of the sources that historians consult. Our newspapers for the given current events of a particular era. We have a newspaper of records, the New York Times, but of course there are other outlets as well. It's something I was talking about earlier today with on another interview, in fact, and something I discussed earlier this week. The fact that the establishment or major media are able to control the narrative is of tremendous significance. Because then they can use that to maneuver, to manipulate subsequent events. One example, I don't want to just talk about myself, but the example of my termination, I think, is a case in point where the media were able to use the Sandy Hook narrative in order to paint me as the antagonist against the parents, right? To play on that narrative, to call that up, and at the same time to reinforce it. And I think that's exactly what was done in that particular instance that played out in late December, early January.
Well, tell me, Jim, if I got this wrong, you were a professor of media studies, correct?
Yeah.
Well, what should you discuss but what the media presents? I mean, tell me where I've gone wrong there.
Well, actually, that's what some of my friends and colleagues say as well. I mean, what are you supposed to be doing? You're a media critic. That's one of the things that you actually teach is media criticism. You teach a course on conspiracies. You teach a course on public opinion. All of these are offered to journalism students, to media, multimedia students, and students of public communication. And so this is something that I was exercising in part in an extracurricular way. See, that's another point that is important, I think, to take into consideration. The university terminated me because I did not file outside activity forms. Yet at the same time, this is something that I was, doing on my own personal time.
Can I just stop you there? What?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm dumb again. Explain to me what business it is, whether you have activities outside of the university that are political or whatever they are. Tell me how on earth is that anybody else's business?
Well, this is something that the university made its business, I think, largely for the purpose of having a pretext to terminate my employment. And these outside activity forms, there's a great deal of confusion as to what their actual application is. In fact, there was a debate, a very heated exchange that took place a few months before my termination in September of 2015 in the Faculty Senate between a number of political science professors and the president of the Faculty Senate. And they were asking, among other things, why is it that faculty were being reprimanded by the administration for, say, writing an op-ed or for making a public statement or organizing a meeting, and yet this was taking place. And in the context of this exchange, the outside activity form was brought up. The the Faculty Senate President expressed astonishment, and he did not understand really the complexity of the form itself and how it should be applied. And this is something that was agreed to by the Associate Provost, Diane Alperin, who also actually signed my letter of termination stating forms.
I'm going to play extremely dumb again, and I'm going to say, so what if you had put in one of these activity forms and there was something that somebody didn't like on it?
Well, ultimately, acting on the advice of the union, I went ahead and I finally filled them out. But I was told in early 2013 by the same union, which I previously was an officer in, that it was not necessary to fill those out, and that this was an infringement on my First Amendment rights, my rights of free speech. So I was getting conflicting information from the union as well as to whether or not these should actually be filled out, whether or not they're applicable. They are also referred to, quite tellingly, as outside employment forms. See, there is a potential conflict of interest since Florida Atlantic is a state university. It's a state agency. And under Florida law, if you are, say, employed by another university, say it might be moonlighting and teaching a course at a community college, so you might be doing consulting.
I can understand that, but you weren't.
No, that's just it, right? It's not applicable. I wasn't. I had a personal blog. I have a personal blog. And the reasoning of the union back in early 2013 was that, well, if you have to fill this out for your personal blog, so does anyone with a Twitter account. So does anyone with a Facebook account.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. And you're doing this on your own personal time and so forth. And they left it at that. And the administration was fine with that. And for, 33 to 34 months, nothing was said. They never brought it up. All of a sudden, they brought it up and said, you've got to fill these out. And I was asking why. Why is it necessary to fill these out? I don't understand. I'm confused. Please clarify the policy. This was deemed to be insubordination on my part.
If you ask them for details about something, you're really being cheeky and you need to be reprimanded. Is this the case?
Well, that's the interpretation, their interpretation, and that in part was what was used to justify my termination. But it also states in our contract, our collective bargaining agreement, that we have the right to question and to help forge university policy. This is part of shared governance between the faculty and the administration. The administration, after all, are faculty members, you know, that have gone over to the other side and now they're managers. But there's this notion of shared governance that the faculty should be free, I'm paraphrasing now, but the faculty should be free to express concern and to help forge, to question university policy. And also, in the clause on academic freedom, we have the right to publicly state our views, our perspectives, so long as we explain that we are not speaking on behalf of the university. But as, for example, you know, Jim Fetzer has pointed out and other academics, faculty never speak on behalf of the university. This is something that is delegated to the administration to do. And in addition, say, if you are working for a journalistic outlet, you're working for a newspaper, why would you contact a professor and ask for their professional opinion on something if you could not provide their professional designation as professor at Florida Atlantic University, whatever the case may be? You know, it doesn't make any sense. So the whole the policy,
we have a little viewer in the background there.
the policy is topsy turvy.
Yeah,
and that's what I was primarily requesting.
Okay, I'm gonna cut right through everything you've just said, and I'm gonna say that you were sacked because you were asking too many questions about Lenny Posner. How's that?
Well, I think that it was more than simply Lenny Posner, but that's one. I think that was the foremost justification in the public realm, right? And even that whole thing is misunderstood. The standoff between myself and the Posners. As you may know, and I've explained this or attempted to explain this in other interviews, I was responding to Lenny Posner, who was acting on behalf of his nonprofit organization, on a copyright infringement claim against my blog. and my use of his copyrighted material. And that is the reason for my certified letter. I never said in the letter, I want justification and I don't believe your son ever lived. I said, I want verification that you in fact have ownership to these particular pieces of intellectual property.
That would be a necessary legal step to any definition defining of who has copyright. That's a necessary step. You're only saying to the guy, show me you've got copyright. Had the action been taken further, he would have had to have done that anyway.
Yes.
You would have called him to proof on that fact in any kind of administrative proceedings or court proceedings. He would have said, prove this to me.
He never did respond.
Yeah.
And so I put a subsequent post up on my blog saying, well, this individual, who, you know, Lenny Posner, whoever the person is, has not responded to my request. It's been 3 weeks or 4 weeks. I requested a response within 10 days. And I was also CCing my internet service provider on this, requesting that he provide proof not only to me, but also to Automatic, which is the San Francisco-based parent company of WordPress.com. Never furnished anything. And he has been making these copyright infringement claims all over. You know, he's had YouTubers be deprived of their channels, no judge, no jury, no anything. He's had other bloggers, their ISPs have taken things down without even asking for verification from him. So I thought that I was actually acting on the behalf of not only myself, but the Constitution, you know, the right of free speech, and other alternative media practitioners who had been subject to, who had been targeted by this Posner individual and been bullied into taking things down or having their media removed entirely from the internet.
Well, have you been following the Kelly Watt interviews that I've done? There's a very good chance there is no such person as Lenny Posner.
I am somewhat familiar with some of the research that she has that she's compiled. Yeah,
it really does look like she was the patsy for trying to set up a personality and a legend behind that personality called Lenny Posner. My suspicion is that someone called Trabner may be closer to the Posner that you know than Posner. Mm-hmm. And my own investigation has shown that this On-Or network has got five or six operatives that run through YouTube, trying wherever you appear or Sandy Hook references appear. Anybody who doubts the official story is branded as the tinfoil hat wearer, nutcase. And inevitably we have a statement that, oh, isn't it fantastic that Jim Tracy got sacked, etc. You are always dragged into it. You were a very good target for them.
Yeah, well, I have a affiliation with a state institution. So like a professional journalist, say who works for a media outlet and who has a salary, they're vulnerable. And, you know, unfortunately, many journalists realize that, and they pull their punches. Even if they are talented and they do want to ask questions, they know how far they can push the envelope. I had tenure. And I thought that that would be an adequate protection against these types of potential infringements. Obviously, that was not the case, and my employer, Florida Atlantic, really more or less acted on the behalf of the media that pressured them to do so.
Let me play dumb again here. Now, my understanding of tenure is that you've got that right. You really have to do something especially astounding to lose tenure, at least in Australian universe. Oh, you practically got to shoot the head of your university to lose tenure here. I can remember days when I went to see my honours thesis instructor, and I literally had to pull him out from under the desk and push the wine bottles out of the way. But he wasn't going to get the sack. He had tenure. Now, I see tenure as a great thing. It means you can go into any side of any discussion with any view that you want, and you do not risk your employment while you're doing that. Now, am I a dummy, or is that the case? Is that how it's supposed to be?
That's how it is supposed to be. That's how it's supposed to operate. I think that this administration, the John Kelly administration at Florida Atlantic, are somewhat contemptuous of tenure. That's how they've behaved. They were brought in by the Board of Trustees to more or less whip the faculty into line. They proposed a very controversial post-tenure review process back in September, which would have given deans, chairs, you know, the administration, the power to more or less terminate faculty that they believe didn't, you know, meet their muster, their requirements. And this was something that was argued about in this September 2015 Faculty Senate meeting. And ultimately, the faculty became more engaged, and they refashioned the policy itself, so it was not as draconian as it had been presented by the provost and by the administration. But these post-tenure review policies are going up all throughout the country. And in a way, I think that they are good, because there are some faculty that, you know, lose sight of the target. Their teaching sometimes suffers, or they aren't as productive in terms of their research. And so they should be taken to task to a certain degree, and there should be a review process. At the same time, as far as free speech protections and the rights of academic freedom and so forth, this should be something that goes without question. There shouldn't even be a concern or, you know, the concern of a threat in those particular, areas. And yet I think that this is something that has been chilling, not only for the faculty at Florida Atlantic, but for faculty throughout the country, because I've been set up as an example. For those that understand the contours of the case, that's not the case with everyone, unfortunately, because of the way that this has been presented in the media. But for those who understand the case, I think they recognize quite forthrightly that this was a blatant act of wrongful termination.
Well, you're quite right there. Now, I wonder if you've thought of putting this matter before the Government Oversight and Reform Committee.
I have not looked into that.
I've been watching some of the committee proceedings, and if you need the exposition of public fraud, hoaxes, intimidation, anything of that nature, this is the public forum to air those issues in.
Now, is this a state or a federal?
This is a federal organization. It's a committee of representatives, and I think at the moment we have, I think it's nine. I'm not sure about this, but I think it's nine Republicans and seven Democrats. And basically, you complain to them about something, and some of the issues of an incidence of corruption and incompetence that have been displayed through these hearings. And American people are not watching these hearings. They're available to watch. There's a particular channel that shows these hearings day after day. You get a 3-hour hearing, for example, on the incredible corruption of a chap called Danny Harris, who's the chief information officer of the Department of Education, who had four other jobs at the same time. Breached 12 federal laws, was recommended by the Inspector General's Department to the Department of Justice for prosecution, and they handed it back to the Secretary of the Department of Education for administrative action, and the administrative action was counseling. Now, this guy managed to get away with giving, he was using employees of the Department of Education for his own audio-visual installation business. He had a car detailing business. He was lecturing at night somewhere else, and he had a some form of contract with the Detroit Education Authority. So this guy's focus was truly not on anything to do with information technology, the job he was being paid to do. And the reports on his competency were just woeful. And you may be aware of an initiative called the Cyber Sprint, put forward just after the OPM hack, where basically the federal government went into each government department, had a look at their security, and came out with a mark out of 100 for their performance. Well, the DOE got, get this, minus 14 out of 100. And that was on their self-appraisal. So, and this guy has been the head of information technology at the DOE for the last 15 years. He's got during the last 14 years has got bonuses accumulating to $250,000. And those bonuses were performance when you've got basically a Department of Education that has in some places the same information technology as existed in the Kennedy era.
Yeah.
This is amazing stuff being shown to us. Now, your situation is one that needs to go before the committee, I think.
Well, I don't know as to whether or not they may just have jurisdiction over federal agencies, because I was working for a state agency, for a state university. But, you know, if in fact their purview goes that far, then I'd certainly be interested in considering it.
In the words of Jason Chaffetz, the committee chairman, we can call anybody in here to question them about anything.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and they can. State government agencies get called in along with federal agencies. In the case of Flint River, for example, you had the two EPAs. You had the state EPA and the federal government EPA, both who did nothing. So they were both called in and really dragged across the coals for what they didn't do. Mm-hmm. I don't think there is a great division between state and federal jurisdictions for the purposes of the oversight committee.
But the oversight committee is a committee of the U.S. Congress, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
It
so
is.
I guess that possibly the tie-in would be that FAU, as well as all other public universities in Florida, do receive federal contracts.
Yes.
So that would be one
federal
thing
funding, I should think,
yeah,
too.
Right, sure.
I still so think that
student aid and there's yes. all sorts of stuff, right? Yeah.
Student funding.
That's something to definitely consider. You know, I realized in going through this process a great many of the shortcomings that the union, the faculty union itself, and the process that they provide really have. Because there is a grievance process where you can grieve, and there's an extra legal process involving arbitration, but you do not have the power of discovery, and that's one of the most important things in a case such as this. You would only get that in a court of law.
Well, where to now, Jim? You're mentioning discovery and the process of law. Is there litigation on the horizon?
Well, I don't know, and I really, even if there were, I wouldn't be able to say at this point. You know, my attorney has allowed for me to go on with alternative media, such as what we're doing here, but he does not want for me to remark on any specifics of any prospective case.
Yeah.
But I do have an attorney, and I have an attorney who was not retained by the union. I did have initially an attorney that the faculty union did retain for me. We didn't see eye to eye on a number of things. I found there to be some shortcomings in his representation as far as I was concerned. And so I hired my own attorney out of pocket. I established a legal defense fund. There's information available at tracylegaldefense.org if anyone would care to support me. And, you know, that's essentially the route that I've taken, and I'm happier with this representation that I've received thus far and the attention from the attorney.
Yeah, I think it's far better to have your own personal attorney rather than something from a union. There's always a chance for collusion in that.
Yes, exactly. That's the attorney that the union did retain for me. His name is Thomas Johnson, is a very competent, very talented, wrongful termination, and labor attorney. And I have no problems with his qualifications, credentials. He's quite accomplished. But I did not see the advocacy on my behalf that I thought was necessary for a case such as this.
Was it the situation that you were actually instructing the attorney, or was there joint instruction from the union and yourself?
Well, the attorney initially got paperwork from the union representative, but once he got in touch with me, I gave him a bunch of additional paperwork. That's about as far as I can actually go. I don't want to go too far down this avenue. I don't want to reveal anything that shouldn't be revealed.
Let's leave that aside for the moment, Jim, and talk about you've had quite a bullying ordeal involved in this through emails and the mail. Can you tell us about that, some of that, please?
Emails. I'm not exactly sure what you're referring to. If you're referring
I thought your wife was getting some bullying emails, harassing emails, and I thought there were some things sent through the post as well.
There were, yeah. This was in mid to late December. I got a great many, abusive and profane emails to my FAU, my university email account. For the most part, we got a few. We got one article of mail through the U.S. mail that was profane.
Yeah.
It happened to be, I was out, or my wife was out, at the driveway, and my, 10-year-old daughter happened to, retrieve the mail, that day. And, it was a postcard, with some, profane, remarks on it. And she immediately, gave it to my wife and said, what does this mean? And so, There were I think emails that were also sent to my employer, some of which I was privy to, some of which I was CC'd on, some I probably will never know about. There were a few death threats over the telephone, through email,
Now look, Jim, these weren't all coincidental, were they? Let's not be absolutely naive here. These things didn't all just happen from different people all at the same time. That's too much of a coincidence.
Well, it's difficult to say who they originated from, a variety of email addresses, but it seems to have been a coordinated wave of emails. In fact, someone broke into my email account at my university, at the former university, and sent an email to the Institutes for Mental Health, U.S. Institutes for
Mental Health. Oh, I saw that one. Yes, yes.
Yeah. And they responded to me. The email said something to the effect of, I'm having delusions, I need help, and then they sent me an automated response. I believe it was automated, more or less. That is the extent of what had taken place. And of course, it's a federal crime to break into someone's email.
Yeah, it's not when the feds do it, because nobody ever finds out about that. I don't think you were hacked by third parties. I think you were hacked by the NCS, National Clandestine Service. It's their brief to do things like that these days. I do not think that a bunch of outraged citizens suddenly had independently their attention focused on Jim Tracy because of anything in the mainstream media, and they all decided off their own bat to do something. You're not going to be able to convince me that that happened.
Well, the very similar type of email harassive attack took place in January of 2013, around the time that I was featured on Anderson Cooper's AC360 program. I think that was January 11th, and then subsequently in April. But it was very intense in January of 2013. Yeah. And, I think that some people may take it upon themselves to just send a nasty email on their iPhone, acting from impulse. But as you suggest, a majority of them are likely, they're probably generated by bots or individuals who are trained to do this sort of thing. It's
indeed,
psychological.
They get work schedules for the day. They get a printout of what they're supposed to do.
Imagine a job like that.
Oh, God, wouldn't it? Oh, you couldn't, could you? You couldn't do it. You couldn't do it. And with my little battles on YouTube posts with people, I do say I couldn't do your job. I can imagine sitting in that little office there.
It's just a lot of bad karma. It'd be like a tax collector or something.
Oh, yeah, it would be horrible, wouldn't it? You know, you enter the intelligence service thinking you're going to be James Bond, and they give you a computer and say, here, go and harass Jim Tracy.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
It's a step down from being a drone operator, probably.
It is. But you can pick these things up because of the nature of when they appear. At one stage, when I first appeared on Jim Fett's show, showing that Sandy Hook was just a complete fake, I got hordes of these pretend people who wanted to know me and wanted to get my information and how did I come up with this and where do I live and what's your bank account and, you know, the nature of, yeah, they were really stupid. There were people saying, oh, look, I want to send you some money. What bank account should I put it in? That sort of thing. It really is silly. They really are not the brightest bunch of coins in the collection. When you set up, I think, well, knock me down if I'm wrong on this, but I think if you set up a national clandestine service and you say, well, look, your brief is going to be that you're going to have to lie to people, you're going to have to cheat them, and you're going to have to make people feel close, probably in some situations, that they would commit suicide. Can you handle that? If you're the person that says, oh, yeah, I can do that for America, there's something wrong with you. You know, you're not on the straight.
But what they're doing, I think, is taking a page out of the whole MO of targeting individuals.
Yeah.
It's a psychological operation, as you suggest, to wear someone down and make them feel as if they are isolated, as if things are hopeless.
Yeah.
In fact, even a few of the emails were specifically along those lines. You know, why don't you end it? And tenure's not going to save you. And we're coming to get you, and that sort of thing. Kind of spooky stuff.
And they do it even with someone like you've got a fairly high public profile, but they do it to people who don't have. They do it to people who simply disagree with them on YouTube posts, or they set up running battles for months on end with people saying, oh, you really just need to go off and commit suicide. You're a piece of shit and the world doesn't need you.
We were discussing earlier this Lenny Posner, or whoever the person is, and this is more or less what they go about doing. They post, inflammatory and defamatory things on the internet, on their blogs about individuals, people who are just doing good research on the Sandy Hook event, and that needs to be done. And they will contact their employers, they will contact their relatives, their friends, and say that, you know what your friend or your, you know, husband or wife or your, you know, brother or sister are doing. They're involved. Yeah. Conspiracy theorists, and they just want to make life very difficult for those people. And that's their function.
Indeed. And the things that they say, after a while, they cease being in any way oppressive, and they become quite humorous. So far, I'm a Jesuit, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Jew, I'm ex-FBI, I'm ex-CIA. Jim Fetzer and I are Jesuit Zionists, whatever that means. They just, after a while, they become so meaningless that you pay absolutely no attention to them. And another thing that these people who push forward this nonsense don't realize is that they show who they are by their continued adversity to you, by their tenacious chasing of you. They show you that they're being paid to do these things. No reasonable, sensible person would simply keep harassing you for months on end to no point and no purpose.
Yeah.
You have to be paid to do that sort of thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's the only motivation. Well, I think that there is an additional impetus by Lenny Posner and his ilk, in that they have bilked the American public for, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. Collectively,
yeah,
with all of these Sandy Hook families, it's, yeah, tens of millions of dollars. And, you know, this is fraudulent.
Oh, no, I think it's well into the hundreds of millions now,
yeah,
I think, with the number of charities that there are.
Sure.
I mean, some of these people have set up their own foundations and trusts based on these children that didn't exist. And they're just raking in millions. Plus, of course, there's all the government bonuses that you can get, the tax-free this and that.
Well, the law enforcement, yeah, the emergency responders and Sandy, yeah, the school officials, I'm sure that all of them have had their palms greased.
Indeed, yeah.
And, it's just a shame. Tens of millions of dollars, if not more, from the federal government.
Indeed.
To keep people quiet. There's a, you know, there's a string of 10, 12 people now who have turned up dead. You know, some of them law enforcement. I don't know if you probably have come across this as well in your research, mm-hmm, who may have, you know, blown the whistle on what took place on December 14th, 2012.
And of course, the problem is that we're not going to see any of this on mainstream. We are the only people that are going to put this stuff forward. We don't have the same penetration that mainstream has yet, but we are getting it. It's a fact that even Alex Jones gets more viewers than Fox. Slowly but surely we are taking over. We are the media now. It's just
It's similar with Jeff Rentz, who has been at it for just about as long, and he has a tremendous listenership, as does his radio, yeah, network. And so people, I think, are increasingly gravitating towards the alternative media because they, yeah, really, you know, the poll that was done last fall, last September or October, the lowest number of people now actually have any faith in the mainstream media. You know, it's like 47 or 49%.
Yeah.
And it's been descending, since they've been doing this, this particular poll. People, and I'm surprised it's actually that much. You know, I'm surprised it's not less than that.
Yeah.
Depends on what poll you look at, but the numbers are going down, and down continually. And I think that there's a struggle as well, because and there's kind of a degree of desperation by the alternative or by the mainstream media, you know, the fact that they have to grasp at straws to put, yeah, down the quote unquote conspiracy theorists and call us names. And there was a columnist for the Miami Herald who wrote a piece about how there are conspiracy theories about the death of Justice Scalia and the Zika virus. And essentially, he brought me into the fray as well, and remarked that even James Tracy, the professor who was finally fired by FAU, has put some posts up about the Scalia, you know, controversy. Well, I mean, these are questions that need to be asked.
Indeed.
Both of those particular issues, well, the event of Scalia's passing and the Zika virus, both of these things, the mainstream media are not asking the pertinent questions that need to be asked. It looks as if Scalia was knocked off. We won't
know. It does, indeed.
There's no autopsy that's been done. An autopsy is impossible to do on an embalmed body.
Well, I was just amazed at the speed with which they came up with the suggestion of having Lottie Lynch as his replacement. It was practically the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, the pillow was hardly off his face when the White House is saying, oh, let's have Lottie Lynch as his replacement.
Yeah, and that is where you have the media, I think the owners and the editors, the managers, who are really complicit in a crime.
Yeah.
There's no investigation, you know, no questioning why an investigation did not take place, no period,
indeed,
of mourning, whether or not you agreed with his legal opinions or anything.
Yeah.
And the idea of a nation that just all of a sudden begins this discussion of who's going to be next.
There's no reflection.
No.
There's no centering on a given set of facts and quiet consideration of them. You're never given it's not a grieving time, it's a thought time. You're bombarded with is the next thing, the next issue comes on to you, and you're told how to think about it. Now we'll see, I'm sure, lots of mainstream appearances by Lottie, Loretta Lynch, saying, well, if it was offered to me, I'd take it, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, I don't think that, frankly, I don't think that she would pass muster of the Republican Senate.
I do not think she would get through a hearing. I do not think she would get through a hearing.
She would be kind of a sacrificial lamb. If she were proposed, if someone like Holder, who, you know, I mean, he should be down in the cell they have in the Capitol building.
Actually. Oh, I disagree with you there, Jim. I think he should be taken out and shot. But a Holder, as a Supreme Court judge, would he show the same corrupt procedures and conduct as he did when he was possibly the worst? Well, given on the fact that he was charged with contempt by the Congress, possibly the worst Attorney General the United States has ever seen.
Yeah.
I've never seen an oilier one.
There was discussion today in today's news that actually I think that this is something that Jonathan Turley, the Washington University professor, the law professor, had on his blog about it was a USA Today article, may have come out Thursday or Wednesday. But anyway, he is suggesting that most likely, and this was something that was echoed in today's press, most likely Obama is going to nominate someone that has quote-unquote bipartisan support.
What does that mean?
That's not someone who is going to be able to get through the Senate hearing process. So it wouldn't be a Loretta Lynch who would immediately draw fire, or someone of that.
As you say, she might be the sacrificial victim. You might put her up so that anybody else that's put up seems good in comparison.
Well, Obama's arrogant enough to do so, but is he stupid enough to do so?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think he is.
I mean, he's got to be the most, the most.
I found something about him that really I've got up my nose. He's chatting away about his mother and father having met on a freedom march, which was actually, I think, 3 years after he was born. So there's a bit of a biological reason for that not being true. Everything I hear about Obama, I mean, I'm just an Australian sitting in Australia on the internet picking up all of this nonsense about your make-believe president, whoever he is. I've no bloody idea who he is.
Have you seen the documentary Dreams from My Real Father?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's very compelling.
My son, at the time, I think he was about 14, we had a hobby of finding Obama pictures and telling each other what was wrong with the picture, how it had been. And he found this marvelous one where Obama was sat in between an old pair that was supposed to be his grandparents, and all the brickwork on the wall was wrong behind him. There were two photographs. One was just the grandparents sitting together, and they'd been slid apart and Obama had been slotted in between them. They were fun days.
He's an intelligence production for sure.
I don't know who he is. I'd love to know who he is.
Yeah.
I really would.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're just about coming up to that break and that chance. Are you there? Are we? Yes, 1 minute to go. So anytime. Look, Jim, it's been great having you on.
I've enjoyed it.
Well, you're most welcome any time to come on and have a chat about any subject you pick. Now, I've also got a program coming up on the True Frequency Radio, so we'll have to arrange something for that as well. Look, if I can give you any comfort at all, what I can say is that the things that are directed against you are the work of low-thinking bullies who really have no integrity. There are more people with you than against you. In as much as what we could do, I think us and the Jim Fetzer and the authors of the books that he's edited and put together, we're giving the money we make to your legal fund. Anything else you can do, ask it. It'll be done.
Well, I certainly appreciate that support, and it's been heartening over the past couple of months. in what I've had to deal with. And Jim has been there 100%. You know, individuals such as yourself and others in the community. It's helped a great, great deal.
Jim Tracy, more power to you. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks. Bye.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Less than 3% of you people read books, because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets, turn them off now, turn them off and leave them off.
Say with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When
when we are successful.
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
Well, hello, it's Alan Powell back. Look, we're still waiting for this Scott Bennett guy to come on. Perhaps he's having a shave. Scott, anybody who knows Scott, tell it. Remind him he's supposed to be on NBC, and we're waiting here very, very patiently for him. Now, I understand that there's a chat line as well that goes on with this. If anybody wants to generally abuse me or put any questions to me about anything that I speak of, please feel free to do so, and Chance can then put those questions through to me. Now, the reason I wanted to have Scott on, and let's just act as if he's going to turn up, but the reason I wanted to have Scott on was to talk about Oregon and the Scalia incident. Let's just call it the incident at the moment. Now, some time ago, Scott and I, and I think two other chaps, interviewed Miss Victoria Sharp, who was a witness to the execution of Lavoy Finicum. Now, I found it at the time, and still find it extremely strange that she was taken into custody. She was an eyewitness as to what happened. She was taken into custody and no statement was taken. She said quite fairly, and I think quite cleverly at the time, that she didn't want to give a statement. And she believes that she was interviewed by the state police and the FBI, but she was interviewed by someone who didn't identify themselves. From memory, I believe she was just taken to a Walmart or a McDonald's or something and led off there. Now, this is extremely strange police procedure. We have, I think, a drone footage that is very questionable, which shows an execution. We, it's said that he was going for a firearm with his right hand on his left side. So what can we say about that? Well, commonsensically, if I were open carrying, and I was right-handed, I wouldn't have any firearm on my left side. And Lavoy Finicum, I believe, was right-handed. I would have had, as most people, I think, as a backup, I probably would have had something around my leg somewhere. I certainly wouldn't have had a backup firearm in a left side pocket facing backwards, as pockets do. Now, I say again that we have a chat line open. If anybody wants to put through any questions or anything about any of the matters I've discussed in the past, or to call me an idiot who doesn't know what he's talking about, please do so, and we can discuss those subjects. Now, the other point that I did want to talk to Scott about was the demise of Justice Scalia.
Just to jump in there for a second, Alan.
Yes, yes, Chance.
A couple of the things that we've seen in the chat room tonight, people are just wondering about where Jim is, if he'll be returning live and whatnot, little details like that. We're going to keep testing this YouTube platform at 8 p.m. Eastern time, Wednesday, Friday. And Jim is just off tonight because he has that conference that he's attending. So,
what conference is that?
I'm not 100% of all the details. I've just been watching some of the other networks and saw them advertising it, and that's how I figured out Jim was off tonight. And then I saw the emails about how you're guest hosting. And then just a couple of things I saw in the chat room. They're asking, did you see Obama's wedding band in his pic with the grandparents after graduating from Columbia before he met Michelle?
Well, no, but I would have expected to have seen things like that because of the incompetence of the people who create these things. They are not the sharpest knives in the drawer. Look, let's put this into the real world.
One more question, and then you can get back to your point you were making.
Yes, yes.
We have another one that's saying, can you back up and explain what execution you were referring to? They just might not be aware of which one you're talking about.
The execution of Lavoie Finicum, I think I was talking about. I could possibly be talking about the execution of
another
Justice
person
Scalia.
Is asking about that. So maybe
let's talk about them both.
Go with Lavoie first and then yep. move on to Scalia and then just give a broad overview as if someone has no idea what you're talking about. They don't. So they've come here and they're open to it. So just give them a good overview.
Okie doke, we'll do. What would we do without producers? Thanks, Chance. Well, look, first off, Lavoie Finicum, involved in the Oregon standoff, goes to a meeting, in a town hall. He never gets there. He's stopped by a police car, what happens is that he gets shot. He gets shot in the face. And according to some reports I've seen, he was shot 9 times in the back. I don't know if that's true. But what I do know is that I interviewed a witness who was in the car called Victoria Sharp quite some weeks ago now. And the problem was that the witness who was in the car didn't give any kind of statement. Now that's where I think things go a bit questionable. Off on a conference tonight, and we were hoping for the next guest to be Scott Bennett, but he's not seeming to have logged on the software yet, so we'll keep going with what we're going with. Now, if you have someone who is an eyewitness, and they're going to say that the man got out of the car, he had his hands up, he was shot in the face, then it's not going to look very good for the law enforcement agencies. It's better that there is not an eyewitness statement on record saying that that happened. It's much better than having one on the record saying that that happened. And that, I must admit, I was fairly dumb about this to start with. That is the most advantageous situation for a government law enforcement agency, to not have a statement on record that says that Lavoie Finicum was shot in the face when he was walking towards police officers with his hands up. You do not want that sort of statement on record. Pass into the real world now. It is on record because it's actually on the YouTube interview that we did with Scott Bennett. I believe there was Scott, myself, Michael Jay, about 3 or 4 other interviewers talking to Victoria Sharp, who seemed a very, very well-composed witness. If she was acting, she was a very, very good actress. I don't think she was acting. I think she was telling the truth. And the strangest thing that comes out of it all for me, of course, is the lack of interest shown by the authorities in her statement. She's in the media, she's just described as an 18-year-old girl everywhere, anywhere, as if that of itself is something wrong. Okay, somebody's got a question on Trump.
Yeah, let me just make sure my mute was off. They had a question on Trump. If you think that Trump is for real or is he controlled opposition? And I think some people might have just come in because they're asking again if you if they think Lenny Posner is for real.
To both, Lenny Posner, no. Trump, I don't care. I think he's a good, he's a refreshing upset to what we've been shown in the past. He's very refreshing upset.
And just to keep on the actual topic that you were talking about with the execution.
I've got a bit of a domestic drama here. Chance, if you can just keep talking for a couple of minutes. Oh, hang on.
Okay, no problem. Just wanted to reiterate some more points from the chat room. If you were to understand roadblocks, kill boxes, and then you understand that they were set up to be taken out. So that's one of the comments about the actual execution that Alan was just talking about. Now, not only is there live footage of this that's been edited, there's all kinds of timestamps that were wrong, just a number of things that people could question about this. So
that we just had a bit of drama. Our cat was attacked by two dogs outside, and my young daughter was left to try and rescue the cat from the dogs. So I'm sorry about that.
I was just reading off for you, Alan. This is from the chat room. If you understand roadblocks and kill boxes, then you understand that they were set up to be taken out. They're referring to the execution on the side of the road.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. I don't doubt that at all. How did they know where Lavoie was going? How did they know where to stop him? It's a matter of logistics.
There's tons of video out there, and a lot of it right off the hop was edited. There was different timestamp problems. Just tons of angles to look at. You could spend countless.
Lavoie could have been picked up at any time. Any time at all. Had they just gone to him with a warrant and arrested him?
That's the same as what we saw with Waco. They at any point in time, he went into town to get the different necessities and things that he need. He'd always leave the compound, and next thing you know, they're in there with tanks killing women and children.
Yeah. And who gave the say-so on that one? Well, Hillary Clinton did. It was Hillary Clinton that actually said, go in, attack. So we found that, I think, from, who was it, Roger Stone? I think it was Roger Stone, not sure, but either Roger's or Larry's interviews, I think they've given out that information. Trump is very, very interesting. Trump is a cat among the pigeons, and I think that's probably his greatest value. Nobody saw him coming. He set everybody talking about the nature of both politics and the achievement of presidents. And perhaps there needs to be more focus on personalities as presidents. Perhaps there needs to be more focus on the role of the president. I think the president is supposed to be the guardian of the Constitution. Is he? Not from what I see sitting in Australia watching the flow of executive orders, which seem to be becoming law. They flow out from the White House and, well, in the time that it takes to get them overturned, through the Supreme Court, you've had laws in operations for probably sometimes up to a year or two. And what other questions have we got there, Chance? Anything going? We've got another guest coming up in 15 minutes who is going to surprise a lot of people, I'm sure. But what other questions have we got there? Anything that?
A lot of them are just comments. One was, today I'm Michael Savage. A man called in, his father, high-ranking scientist, going against the government, was killed, and similar to the judge. He claims the Supreme Court will be picked by the president. Or the Supreme Court will pick the president. My bad. Can't read.
Well, here's another problem that you have when you have a surveillance state, as you have in America. You can find something on everyone. Everybody's got a monkey in their closet. And that's no different for a lot of Supreme Court judges.
They're saying Clinton didn't make the call. It was the governor. And I remember hearing stuff like Janet Reno and some of the things like that back then. So just a couple other comments. Armand and Lavoie were speaking to the sheriff, FBI, every single day, including the day of the ambush. They were headed to meet the sheriff and an appointment with the FBI the following morning. So there's more than enough information on this to call, you know, just an outright execution.
Yeah, it's all questionable, isn't it? If he's going to meet the FBI the next day, there's a chance that the thing's going to be negotiated down, obviously. Why is he going to see them? He's not going to see them just to act adversely towards them. He wanted some sort of deal, I should think, and he didn't get it. He got executed. Now, if they had a drone there ready to view what he was doing when he was driving away from the checkpoint, money's on that they had drones there most of the time, seeing who was going where, who was doing what. Now, Jim and I have found a piece of footage of some so-called Oregon militiamen who are asking amongst themselves whether they should sign the agreement. And the agreement is one of those FEMA actor agreements. It's a release so that their performance can be used by the federal government in any way that it wishes. I'm not sure that's come to light yet, but we have that video. I'm not sure if it's been posted on YouTube, but it's well worth looking for. Trump, going back to Trump, if he promises to do everything he says he's going to do, get America back up on its feet, rake out all the corruption and all the rest of it, well, fantastic. But this is all election talk, isn't it? He's a new broom, but we don't know what the sweeping's going to be like after the election. So who would I favor? Would it be Bernie Sanders? Would it be Ted Cruz? I'm not sure it makes a lot of difference, to tell you the truth, who is the president. And I can't see that you're ever going to have a president of the strength of Kennedy again in America, because that's simply not on for a president to start doing things that a president does, things like walking around the Federal Reserve and issuing actual Treasury notes, that sort of thing. He was also advocating a much closer relationship with Russia, which would have saved us, I suppose, the Cold War and the billions of dollars spent there pretending that Russia was going to be a fantastic enemy of the world, when it turned out not to be. Much as I think this current enemy of the world, Islam, is going to turn out not to be. It's been played up a lot. Chance, any more questions for the last 10 minutes before we introduce our next guest? We've got anything there that's...
I got to pull my YouTube back up. 1 minute.
There's nothing there saying you're a fat idiot and your show is a disgrace, is there?
Those comments usually come in the morning.
Oh, okay. Well, if they do come in from someone called Philip Franklin, who I firmly believe is actually Lenny Posner, they might also come in from Big Nash. There's about 15, 16 that I've noticed to come up with the same views and agree with each other. And it's always something against somebody saying about anything about Sandy Hook, for example. It's never about the Boston bombing. Some reason that makes me think that it's particularly connected with our friend Lenny Posner, if he even exists as Lenny Posner. Some of the research I've done recently with a chap, I'm only going to say a chap from the Eastern Seaboard, and his interview will come out soon on Nothing But the Truth. We're starting to believe that there was a widespread use of autistic children in the Sandy Hook hoax, both as the children who were supposedly murdered and as the players on the day. I'm fairly sure that the group of children led across the car park by Alicia Hannon, the ex-FBI officer, dressed up as a policewoman. I'm fairly sure that they were autistic and that they came from an organization called, I think, Vantage. I've been talking with Kelly Watt, who's found out quite a lot of this stuff. I think her interview is on Nothing But the Truth. She's found out that there are two sorts of school, one for special children, which generally means autistic, and one for children who are not autistic and who are very talented. And it's probably the case, I should think, that these autistic children were used as props. They're a very handy sort of prop because you can't really question autistic children on what happened on a certain day. And if you could, and if you could get anything sensible from them in terms of their memory, it could easily be knocked over in a court of law. So there we are. Well, Chance tells me we've just got a few comments. For all those people who like to say basically that I'm a Jewish shill or whatever, try thinking before you post. I've been doing what I do for a good, I think, 8 months now. I get no money from it. I do it because I believe what I do. Most of you who criticize me do it because you're either paid to or you're part of a little software system that says nonsense as posts. And really, your day of influence, that idea that you can direct the narrative anymore, that's gone, guys, okay? That's gone. Don't waste more money on it because it's just throwing good money after bad. The idea that you can have someone like a name called Philip Franklin trying to pretend that he's a real character who's very upset about what's happened to the poor Sandy Hook parents and that he can blag me about it. That's gone. Nobody believes that anymore. We've lived through that and we thought about it and we realized that if you're on the internet trying to make somebody look black for 6 months, you've got something more as an agenda than simply being an independent person putting their opinion on the internet. Independent people who act reasonably don't act that way. So you're either, I'm afraid, psychotic or you're an operative. Now, I suppose we can go early to our next guest. Chance, do we have him there? We're not going to show his face. And I'm going to leave him to have a complete half hour to himself. Why? Because I believe this man, even if you disagree with anything he says, I really couldn't care. I want this man on because of his integrity. I want him to say what he believes. And I think that basically, whether his views are right or wrong, his integrity is it's an object lesson to most of us. Are you there, sir?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, good, great.
Well, introduce yourself, and you have at least the next half hour to say exactly what you used to say.
Okay. Well, if you find it necessary or appropriate to break in, by all means, I don't object to...
I'll only do that if I don't understand what you're saying. First of all, who are you?
Who am I? I'm the Appster, Apollonian. You can call me App. You can call me Jay or Ray or Ray
well,
Jay.
And introduce what you do. Introduce what you do. And
well, I make nasty comments on blogs and YouTube and, you know...
I shut me up when you like, Appster, but I found that you were pretty good at isolating operatives.
I was a philosophy major, took philosophy, the subject of philosophy extremely seriously before I went to school. And I have continued to, follow philosophy, since I got out of school years ago. I was not able to graduate with the major because I'm an Aristotelian, you see, a follower of Aristotle, and they don't like Aristotle. Aristotle holds that the only reality is is the objective reality that you perceive with your senses. Okay, if you cannot sense it, then it's not reality. All right, and that is in contrast, as you may know, to Plato, who was Aristotle's, you might say, instructor for a little while. He went to Plato's school, who said that reality transcends from some unknowable source, and that the senses can only perceive, a very vague version of the real reality. Aristotle objected to this, and he made it much, much more simple. And he said, the reality that you get, that you perceive from your senses, that's it. That's the only reality. What you see is what you get. And, all right, the problem with this is that Aristotle's philosophy, as you might know, it's not good for moralism and Pharisaism, or what we know as the so-called philosophy of good evil. There's no good evil. Now, Aristotle himself didn't say that, but from the necessary premises of the objective reality, all you get is determinism, meaning absolute cause and effect. And this is affirmed by, in my judgment, okay, this is affirmed in Christian religion, as we know, by St. Paul, and then later on, a tremendous thinker among the church fathers called St. Augustine. And Augustine, he had a problem with this British monk called Pelagius, who held that, the human being, by means of free will, could do good works. And by means of these good works, he could earn his way into heaven, as if you could go up to God and show him a ticket saying, God, you owe me a place in heaven. And Augustine, of course, as you know, he rejected this. We're all sinners and we are all hopelessly doomed because, we're human beings given a will, not a perfectly free, godlike will, but, we follow our own will, we're self-interested, we're egoistical, and hence, we're sinners, see, hopelessly doomed to the fiery flames of heck. And that's the problem with Aristotle, that modern philosophy has a great, they don't like it, and they want to insist upon this Platonistic style philosophy. Anyway, that's why I wasn't able to get my undergrad's degree in philosophy. I had to settle for a more general degree in what they called, what in the heck is it? I forget. It's okay. University studies. That's similar to liberal arts. You have a bunch of all of these, various courses that credit hours, And then I went to grad school as a history major, see. Anyway, what was I talking about? I'm a serious student of philosophy, and that's why I take exception to Fetzer, Fetzer's good for the details, as I pointed out to you, for all these various, you know, hoaxes and incidents like JFK. I mean, he has an encyclopedic knowledge of the details of JFK and, you know, now Sandy Hook and Boston bombing. And those are very good. You know, he deserves credit for that. You've got to have that. Okay. But where he fails, as I pointed out, was inducing, you know, making use of inductive logic, which is just a fancy word or a fancy phrase for generalizing. You take these particular instances and then you generalize from that. And that general criminal enterprise is none other than central banking, also known as fractional reserve money in banking, and especially in the way of our present U.S. Federal Reserve Bank. And then there are other instances of this. The Bank of England is a central bank. The ECB, the European Common Bank or something like that. It's called the ECB. That's for the euro dollar. And then there's the BIS. That's the Bank of International Settlements. These are all central bank institutions. The most powerful, of course, being the U.S. Federal Reserve, which provides the, what's called the reserve currency, and the petrodollar, you know, by which the United States, by military force, tries to force all the other countries to use dollars in order to buy oil. Well, you know, countries have gotten away from this. China and the BRICS nations now. The BRICS nations are very significant. That's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and the S at the end stands for South Africa. They're not terribly great for industry, but, you know, they produce a lot of gold. But anyway, these BRICS nations make up about 30% now of the world's GNP and growing, of course. United States seems to be receding. Okay, now that's why I criticize Fetzer so intensively. He won't investigate that issue of central banking, what a fraud it is. Because you know what it is in simplest terms? It's legalized counterfeiting by which these banks issue paper money. And in fact, not even paper money. They don't even bother to do that nowadays, you know, with digitalization. They just, key it in on a keyboard. And it appears on the computer screen, spreadsheets, you know, that's how simple it gets. By this means, that's how they're able to finance, Sandy Hoax and all of the other, you know, incidents, by which they enforce their growing and rapidly consolidating world dictatorship, which they call world government, by which, all right, this is no kidding, by which they intend to mass murder most of the world's population by one means or another. And they're doing it right now. They're doing it right now by means of a slow motion type of a genocide in the way of poison food, poison GMO foods, poison food additives. Another big way they do it is toxic vaccines, by which they induce all kinds of maladies and sicknesses. And this is kind of a slow motion genocide that they're doing right now, even as we speak. And of course, with all of this, legally counterfeited money that they've generated, they own every single, mass media outlet, radio, TV, and all of the print, all of it. There is no exception. And by means of this overwhelming monetary financial power that they possess, by means of this idiotic central banking, you know, they can enforce a literal dictatorship by which they are actually doing this as we speak, you know, the mass murder of most of the world's population. And now, of course, they don't totally control the internet, but they have a tremendous presence on the internet, regardless, because despite, you know, the presence of people like you and Fetzer, they can still finance with their, you know, nearly, it's not completely infinite, but it's nearly infinite means of financing, you know, all kinds of others. And these people are glib. They're, you know, they're glib. They're articulate. They look at Alex Jones. And they can try to drown out, you know, the real, honest people of, the internet like you and Fetzer. Okay. So that's my criticism of Fetzer. He totally overlooks this overarching, you know, financial dictatorship. It is the basis. It is the existential basis. Existential meaning practical. It's the existential basis of their dictatorship. Now, the abstract basis of their dictatorship is Platonism and the false morality of good evil. See, they intimidate people by means of good evil. Don't you want to be good? Don't you want to be progressive? Don't you want to be trendy and fashionable and go along with the crowd and all the cool people? Don't you want world government by which we will get rid of warfare? In fact, as long as we've had you know, the United Nations and NATO and all of these you know, world government instruments of theirs, we've had constant warfare, as you may know. Now, okay, that's a lot of details, I have to admit, okay? But there's an easier way to symbolize all of this and characterize all of this, and that's to characterize these people led by Jews at the top, because the Jews are, they're the best. They are the most organized. And you can find that out simply by examining their Talmud. Their Talmud teaches the Jews warfare against all the rest of humanity, and that all the rest of humanity is anti-Semitic, which of course we are when you examine, you know, what the Jews really are all about, what they stand for. You know, they're all for the Jews. Therefore, you know, Jew dictatorship over all the rest of humankind. And okay, the best characterization of this is Satanism, whereby these people make themselves God. Now, from a philosophical point of view, how would you analyze this? Well, it's simple. It's very simple. What is Satanism? It's just extreme subjectivism, by which all of reality, your entire view of reality, is not objective. Rather, it's a creation of your own, you know, mentality. That's the difference between an objective reality and subjectivism. And from subjectivism, you get good evil. You know, good evil is the Jews', it's their entry point. It's their pretext by which they then justify this subjectivism. Okay. So again, Satanism is simply extreme subjectivism. Okay. And against that is the Christian viewpoint. Well, it's the rational viewpoint, right? The objective Aristotelian, but this is best characterized as, you know, the Christian. The Christian, as you know, Christ, especially in the Gospel of John, chapter 14, verse 6, he says, "I am the truth, the way, and the life." Okay. Now, the way and the life, those are kind of abstract, but when he says the truth, That's very, you know, explicit. What Christ is telling us is that there is such a thing as truth. Truth really is something that really does exist. And that's what Christ is. Christ is truth, the only way to God. And that's what he means when he says, you know, the only way to the Father is through the Son being Christ and Christ being the truth. Okay, later on in Gospel of John, chapter 18, verse 37, you have Pontius Pilate as he is, conversing there with Christ. He asks the rhetorical question. He says, well, what is truth? But, you know, Christ, you know, kind of lets that pass because everybody can figure that out for themselves, you know, eventually. And in fact, it's already been answered by Aristotle. Okay. So let's see. I guess the next thing to do is to get into specifics, which I already have done. Let's see. For the money and banking subject, it has to do with what is money. But at this point, you haven't said anything, so I want to make sure you're still there. Are you still there? Can you still hear me okay?
Yeah, I'm listening. I said I wouldn't interrupt you. We have a chat room going, and there's lots of people saying to cut you off, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, well, you know who they are. They're all Jews, or they're many more numerous suck-alongs from the Gentiles. You know, I want to assure you that it's not all the Jews doing here. The Jews are simply the cement, you know, who connect all these Satanists. Okay. They are the lead. They are the leaders of the Satanists. They are the satanic leaders. And, further, there's lots of Jews, you know, they're not, at the top. They're not, at the mastermind level. But unfortunately, they suck along. They stick up for the Jews. You know, they don't know anything about the Talmud, but they say, oh, the Jews are just like anybody else, which is false, and which all you have to do is to check what their Talmud teaches them. But, you know, so much for the Satanists. The most important question, I think, has to do then with money. What is money? All right. Well, money, as you may know, it's something that's very abstract, okay? And the reason is that when it first began, you know, when civilization first began, and this has to be before even writing, you know, before they even got writing together, okay? All trade, all commerce was done by means of trading and bartering, what we call bartering, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but if you went to the market and, you know, your particular item either wasn't wanted, or if it was wanted, the item that you were looking for yourself, if it wasn't there, well, there was a problem. What were you going to say? You sold lumber. What are you going to do? Take all your logs, put them in your wagon, and then drag them all back to, you know, where you live. Okay. So what they did was they would have to trade it for some other, you know, item on the market, which had value, which had its own, what's called intrinsic value, right? You know, trial and error and experience took place. They figured out what, you know, is the most practical item to serve as money. Money being, it's a means of, it's a medium of exchange. It's a store of value, and it's a unit of account, among other things. Okay. But those are the main things, especially as a medium of exchange. You can use money to buy anything. Anything is willing to be exchanged for this money, this common thing. So it has to have its own value, right? It's got to be something which is of value on its own merits. So therefore, what would be most practical? It would be It would have to be a metal, so that as it changed hands, it wouldn't be damaged, or it would, you know, be damaged the least as it changed hands, right? And since you don't want to have to carry in a ton of iron or a ton of lead, okay, you would want it to be fairly portable and practical to use and exchange. It would have to be a precious metal. And the best things for that is gold and silver. So that's why money, it has to be these things, a medium of exchange, a unit of account, and a store of value. But for practical purposes, it's got to be a metal, a precious metal, gold and silver being best. Platinum, for example, is 10 times more scarce than gold. So you see, it's not as practical. Palladium is another valuable metal, but I guess it's the same thing for palladium. Anyway, gold and silver has always been accepted as money by all races, of all people, of all cultures, all throughout history, you know, for those very reasons. Now, the reason you don't want fiat money, which basically is paper, but nowadays is also digitalized, and they want to bring it even more so, you know, to digitalization, is because that can be expanded and legally counterfeited, you see, by the issuers of that currency. It's not money anymore. It's now called currency. Money coming from the Latin root moneta, to be minted. Okay, it's now called currency, and that can just be printed up, you know, ad infinitum. All you got to do is just keep adding zeros, right? But of course, the problem with that is that eventually it'll take billions and billions and trillions even just to buy a loaf of bread, you know, depending upon how terribly they inflate the currency. Now, this currency is often used during wartime, but that is most justified as a means of taxation, not money. You can exchange it, but it's probably not going to be worth too much at the end of the war, as we know from the American Revolution and also from the Confederate money that was used by the Southern states. Okay. It ultimately, the only money that should be accepted is commodity money, money with its own intrinsic value that trades by itself over the market. And that's, the best is gold and silver. You can use other stuff, but the best always reduces down to gold and silver.
Abster, you've got a view of the future based on a decline. You'd tell us something about that as well?
Absolutely. Okay. Well, this is relatively simple, and we have the decline and fall of the Roman Empire by Edmund Gibbon as one good account. And then one of our latest, greatest geniuses is Oswald Spengler, who wrote The Decline of the West. He didn't explicitly cite Gibbon, but, you know, if you're a historian, you can easily, classify the two, you know, associate the two upon similar theses or themes. Okay, and what it is your foundation generation, you know, they're heroes, they're fighters, they're brave, they're very healthy, viral people, okay? There's no weaklings among them because they die out. And, okay, sure, they're not terribly educated, and they're very farming-oriented, like the original Romans, and like also the original Americans. These are heroes, okay? And so, therefore, they adhere and respect an objective reality. Okay, an Aristotelian objective reality. Now, they don't know Aristotle or, you know, his philosophy, but they do understand Christianity, especially the Americans. And so, you know, within Christianity, the real thing, you have the Aristotelian concept.
So you're saying, please correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying modern Christianity is just a subjective replacement of real Christianity.
Yes, exactly. It's become Judaized. And if you observe, look at the, now I was born and raised Catholic, and I will be the first to tell everyone that the present Vatican, not the Christian Church or even the Catholic Church, these people are not the church. They try to pretend that they are. They're just an, you know, a group of officials who pretend that they tell the church what to do. But look at the Vatican. They're a bunch of criminals, child molesters, and faggots, homosexuals. They're a bunch of scum who ought to be exterminated as far as I'm concerned. And if you observe, they collude with the Jews. They collude with Israel. They don't stand up for the Palestinians, for example, you know, who had their land stolen by these criminal, satanic, murdering scum, you know, those Jews. Okay, and what happens going back to, you know, the cycle, just as reality, if you remember, it's objective according to Aristotle, hence it's determined according to absolute cause and effect. And hence, the third step is it is cyclic. And thus, the decline of the civil...
Hello? Hello? Where's he gone? Let's just wait. I gave him instructions to come back in if this sort of thing happened. No? Can't hear anything. Well, we've only got 7 minutes to go, so I'll continue on with what I was talking about. Donald, this might be an object lesson, actually, in... censorship. Anyway, I'll continue on about Donald Trump. A fascinating subject, isn't he, really? So first of all, he was a television personality, just like Ronald Reagan was a film personality. And I suppose in some way you look at Ronald Reagan and he had all those roles as cowboy, always doing the right thing. When we look at Donald Trump, of course, he had the what was the name of that series he had, Chance, on television? It was the Apprentice, that's it, The Apprentice. And what he was doing was sorting out people who could do the job, and, of course, those who couldn't do the job got the boot. Now, I wonder if in people's minds this is somehow attached to the idea that if Donald gets in, he's going to do exactly the same thing. Give people who can't do the job the boot. I doubt it. I doubt it very much. A particular problem that seems to arise, especially in these hearings that I've been looking at, the Oversight, Government and Reform, is that you can't actually get rid of incompetent government servants, people who are high in the administrative system and who are just incompetent. They can always resign on benefits with all of their accrued benefits, or they can just be moved to other places. You can't continually chase around these people who have made being in government, being in the executive, their career, and playing that as a career you can't chase them around completely. In fact, in one hearing that I was watching lately, there was a suggestion that somebody who had done something fairly corrupt.
I got to jump in just before you hit the top of the hour.
Yeah.
You had a couple of really concerned people who want to know what happened with the cat. And is
has
it
he
okay?
gone?
Is the cat well,
I,
okay?
I didn't
or...
chuck him off, and nor did Chance.
No, not your guest. The cat. Remember your daughter and the
oh, the cats.
They're,
oh, the guests.
They're very
yeah.
concerned.
Oh.
Just please address this, and then you're at the top of the hour.
Oh, I see. Well, what happened was that the cat, being extremely violent, bit them, scratched them, lost some claws, and put up a good fight. But I'd like to know what a couple of dogs are doing wandering around the streets ready to attack cats. Anyway, we'll find that out. I'll keep you posted. Oh, so how long have we got to go now, Chance? A minute. Okay. Well, I'll give you an update on the cat next time. Now, the reason I wanted Apsterian on is that he, whether you agree with him or not, and most people are going to say that they disagree with him, this man has an intense integrity. This is an intense integrity that's missing in society today. And on certain things, you're not able to say that he's wrong. He follows, for example, he follows Orwell, even though he's religious, he follows Orwell to the letter. He knows that a fascist government needs to reduce everything down to subjectivity. You cannot have an objective wrong that's attributable to a fascist government existing. And the idea that everything in the world is subjective and that somebody can appeal to your subjectivity to create a community for you is part of the ideal of fascism. Now, I hope people, if you were upset by what Apsterian was saying, I'm sorry about that. But there has to be a lot more people in the world who are intent on showing what actually happened. That has to be their intention. Whether they fail or not is another question. But you have to have people who have an idea of objectivity and who want that objective idea of the past to be the record in history so that people are not subject to basically public frauds like Sandy Hook, like the Boston bombing, like 9/11. If we lose our intense desire to know the truth, we've lost everything. Well, this was Alan Powell sitting in for Jim Fetzer again. He'll be back as usual on Monday. I am going to have a show shortly on Chris Geo's station, which name of which escapes me. Is it Truth Frequency Radio? Shortly. So anybody who wants to make nasty comments about me or say anything unpleasant, that's another forum for you to be able to do it. Thank you for listening and goodbye.